Chuck and Julie, bringing you the truth, straight up.
I'm Julie Hayden, and I'm working at...
An Emmy-winning former investigative reporter, a highly successful trial attorney, and publisher of a major Denver area newspaper. They've been partners as talk show hosts and in marriage, as parents, for over 10 years, providing thought-provoking information, opinion, and entertainment live, local, and interactive. Everyone's voice is always welcome on the Chuck and Julie Show.
Well, hello, everybody. Chuck Bonnier, Julie Hayden, doing the sporting look. This is Chuck and Julie Show, the grassroots show, Truth Straight Up.
That's right. Brought to you by Mountain West Wellness, Advanced Acupuncture, and Chinese Medicine. Yeah, that's right. As we've mentioned before, our son is having a heck of a golf year, and I just like literally walked back in from coming back from Fort Collins for a practice round. So all kinds of stuff to talk about today, but wanted to bring on Ash Epp, Ash in America. She did, and Ash, just an amazing job covering the Mike Lindell trial. You were the only reliable voice there. The other reporters like to opine on it without having ever covered it. So wanted to get your take on it. So thank you for your time and for the great work you did during the trial.
Oh yeah. Thank you. It's my pleasure. My intention was to just capture what was happening. Obviously I have a lot of opinions about this story, and I gave my opinions, you know, on other shows and Badlands and in my writing outside of, but in the thread while I was doing the trial, I really wanted it to just be what was happening. I think the people have a right to know. You know, we've all lived this story at this point, and that was the intention. It was my honor to do it.
Well, let me give us the conclusion was.
Sure. So the conclusion was that MyPillow was found to have no liability. So MyPillow won their case. Mike Lindell was found to be liable for two defamatory statements, but they didn't find civil conspiracy. They didn't find malice. They didn't award punitive damages. It was about $440,000 that he was ordered to pay as, you know, damages for the harm, but they didn't reach malice. And there are some questions about the legal standards that I believe that they're planning to appeal there. And then the brunt of it was Frank's speech. Frank's speech was found liable for the same two statements that Mike Lindell made, plus the statement of Professor Clements on the stage at the Cyber Symposium. He editorialized the claims about Eric Coomer a little bit on the stage to put into his fable that he was telling. He was telling a fable of a gang member during that speech, and he used Eric Coomer in that and editorialized it a bit. And that was where they found intentional infliction of emotional distress. Still no civil conspiracy. No defendant was found guilty of civil conspiracy. All told, it was $2.3 million. And Eric Coomer was asking for $62 million. There were 10 defamatory statements total in question. And as I said, Mike Lindell was found liable for two of them, and Frank's speech for those two plus one more, so three.
Now, you wouldn't know that.
I didn't realize this was Mike, you know, the way it's been reported is Mike Lindell was found liable for $2.3 million. Are you indicating it was really split? A certain amount was against him personally, and then another amount against Frank's speech?
Yes, Frank's speech had the brunt of it. So the Mike Lindell was ordered to pay $444,000 and change, I believe. And Frank's speech had the rest of that $2.3 million.
Does Frank's speech have any assets? I mean, what is Frank's speech?
Frank's speech is no longer an entity. This came out at trial that it's now, I think, Lindell Media Corporation. But there, you know, I would think that there would be a way to recoup, you know, through it. The entity didn't die off completely. It evolved, I think. So I don't know. That's a matter for the courts to figure out.
That's really kind of critical, because there may be no assets. And I mean, if you were being sued for $62 million, you wouldn't be pouring money into an entity. So that's interesting. I mean, no one said Lindell was found, because they always said Lindell was found for $2.4 million, not that Lindell was found for $400,000 in Frank's speech separately some amount.
And MyPillow was not found not liable. No, of course not. Of course not. Right. And actually, they also reported that Mike Lindell and Frank Speech were found guilty of engaging in a civil conspiracy to, you know, defame Eric Coomer. And that was that's inaccurate to say.
Well, and I mean, and that's why we wanted to have you on, because if you read the headlines, right, if you listen to Kyle Clark, you would think that Mike Lindell was found guilty, an absolute vindication for Eric Coomer. And indeed, it's pretty much the not the exact opposite, but you know, 8/10 the exact opposite. It'd be like if you're if you're accused of 10 crimes and you're only convicted of 2, the prosecutors don't wander away saying victory, victory. The defense attorney wanders away saying victory. So, I mean,
that's right. Not true, Julie. They find people guilty of less.
But what I'm saying, though, is that it was not an overwhelming victory for Eric Coomer.
It's the amount. It's not whether 3 or 7 or 12 or 7. Only finding 2.4 or whatever it was versus the 62 million.
Well, that's my point. That's what I'm trying to say. Is that if you listen to the media, the fake news media, you would be under the impression that this was an absolute devastating loss for Mike Lindell.
Yeah.
And not at all, right?
No, in fact, I talked to him a couple hours after the decision came down, and he was super optimistic. And then Monday night, I had him on one of my shows. The clip is on my Twitter if people want to see it. But he's very pleased. First of all, I was with Mike when he was served with this lawsuit at the Colorado Capitol, and he was livid. But he was livid because MyPillow was sued. They sued my employee-owned company. This is unfair. It's ridiculous. They should have no liability for anything that I say. What is this? He was livid about it. And I think that's a big part of why he fought this so hard is right. Because MyPillow was sued. So in that respect, he's thrilled. And I believe that that's authentic. And I called that before I even talked to him because I knew he was going to be thrilled about MyPillow because that was the source of his rage. Several of the defamatory statements were that were in question in this case were Mike Lindell responding to the case, right? It was responding to Eric Coomer's litigation, not overtly defaming Eric Coomer about the other, you know, election rigging and whatnot. And it was always centered on MyPillow. It was what drove his rage. So he's pleased about that. There's a couple other things that I think are wins for all of us. One is, you know, we work in new media. If you think about being your media entity being liable your advertisers being liable for anything that you say on the air, that's going to destroy the advertising model of new media. And that with MyPillow being found not liable, that's a win because what they were trying to say was that Mike Lindell made statements and other people made statements. They made them on Frank's speech and there was a MyPillow code on the screen. And so those three entities, you know, engaged in a civil conspiracy. And the fact that MyPillow was found not liable, I think is a great thing. The other thing is that only these specific statements were found for them to have liability. I think that some of the stuff that's excluded is a win for the First Amendment.
Well, it's a little shocking. The court allowed MyPillow to be
continued. No, given the court, it's not.
What's
shocking is that they didn't throw Mike Lindell's family, dog, grandchildren, anyone he ever showed hands with in the lawsuit.
Nonetheless, I'm surprised the court allowed that to go forward on a basis that you had a ad or a barcode on it, and that's pretty tenuous, and the only people with common sense appears to be the jury here. Found it not.
Yeah, I have to say I don't know all the pretrial stuff, right? I don't know what the relationship of the judge with these parties after going through all of the motions and everything for so long. I don't know what that dynamic is like, but I know what I saw at trial, and I didn't see any bias. I thought that the judge was incredibly disciplined and careful to not allow anything to happen in front of the jury that would bias them both ways, no matter what it was. But I thought she was very patient and very fair. It was a three-ring circus. And I know there's been a lot of assertions about the judge. There's always a lot of assertions about the judge whenever anybody involved in elections is in court. But I didn't see bias. Okay. In fact, I called this outcome on Friday and I made my prediction based on what I saw in the courtroom. So
what did you predict?
I said MyPillow will have no liability. Frank's speech will be found of some liability. And with Mike Lindell, it's a toss up. I don't think he technically should be liable for defamation, but I think that the plaintiffs did a good job of confusing the issue. And I wrote that on Twitter. So it's the prediction before the judgment came out.
Once
again, anybody else made a prediction, but I was pretty damn close.
Did you give a estimate
A
on
money? No, I
damages?
didn't.
Okay.
You know, though, I want to go back to a point you made. Well, there are a couple points here. You know, given the lawsuit, and I think, and sort of the broader, I think, issue here is, and I'm glad that Mike is happy, but I think we should all be happy because I also think these kind of lawsuits, the lawsuits that were filed against you, right? The whole point of them is to silence people, to scare people, to intimidate people. And I think that this, you know, these people, the elites, the people who are, you know, we can get into all of the election issues, they want to make everybody shut up and they want to scare advertisers away and they want to destroy this new media model. I think they want to go back to the days where Kyle Clark gets to tell everyone in Denver what to think.
Yeah, I think that's
I'm
true.
still I'm I, and it's great you're here because I certainly can't get it out of the normal media and stuff, but why was Frank speech
Well, Chuck, let her answer my question first, though, okay? About just that they were trying to silence and attack the whole media.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. And I, you know, being in there and what I was doing was literally just writing down what was happening with my thumbs on the notepad on my phone. And there was a specific media order in this case that you weren't allowed to do live tweeting, live blogging, live posting, live publishing. You had to publish from outside. You had to file your stories and publish from outside the courthouse. So on every break, it was running down and running out and just posting, copy paste, copy paste. There's a lot of typos and stuff because I just didn't have time. You know, it's like 15-minute breaks and just trying to get it all out there, and they're coming out in batches. But what that did, I think it was pretty effective, just having that record. And I didn't get all of it, right? Sometimes they're still there, they finish their answer and they're on to the next question, and I'm just starting to write down the answer that was just said. So there's some exchanges that I miss, but I tried to get the most, you know, the m most of it and the important things. But what that did was, I think it, you know, defanged a lot of the narratives that were happening around this on the left and on the right. There was a ton of infighting around this case. And, you know, I did pretty much every interview that I was asked to do while I was doing this reporting, but there were a couple that I said no to because I could tell it was just like, I want you to come on and show how I think that this person who's a witness in the case or another influencer is a really bad person. And no, I'm not going to do that because what matters is the facts, the evidence, and how they apply to the law in this case and what the jury is seeing. That was the point. So, you know, if Kyle Clark comes out and says, you know, Mike Lindell and Frank Speech engaged in civil conspiracy. Well, you can, you know, we can go back and we can look at the record and we can see what it says. You know, there's other people making other assertions about this case, and it's not an official transcript, but it's more of a record than we usually have when we're dealing with the black box of federal court. And just one final thing on that is that Congress could change this. They could make it so that it's streamed and we can all see what's happening in court.
Right.
This is
Right.
very much a matter of public interest. They won't, but they
No.
could.
Yes, exactly. Okay,
Well,
Chuck.
the reason, well, I guess there's the good reason and the bad reason. The bad reason is that it'll show the courts for what they are.
That's
And
a
they don't
good
want
reason.
people to see the courts for what they really are. The good reason, if you want to believe it, is that everybody will play to the cameras rather than saying it to in court. They'll just ham it up. And you know, I've seen that in some of the state trials where it's a counselor hamming it up for the television.
But that's always a good thing for
That's a good thing. That's good.
TV.
So
Having
let's
been a
go to
TV
my other
reporter,
question.
hamming it up for the cameras is, no, I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
Were there various statements, or whatever you want to call them, published by Frank's media that had nothing, that were not made by Mike Lindell? It was done by Frank's media separately from Mike Lindell.
So there were statements. Tina Peters had one. She made a statement about Eric Coomer that was made on Frank's speech. That was one of the statements in question. Joe Altman had a couple, I think, statements that were in question. Professor Clements, obviously, I mentioned, and was found liable for that. I think, and I don't know for sure, but I think that's because of the editorializing that was done on the original claim. And it was the cyber symposium. So, you know, there was that, that's how they got to intentional infliction of emotional distress is through that, I think. But no, it wasn't that Frank's speech made statements, you know,
But it was
separate from
published on
Mike
Frank's
Lindell.
speech,
It was
having
the
nothing to
platform versus
do.
publisher
Yeah,
question.
it's Frank's speech. It was said on Frank's speech, but there were not statements by like
Mike.
Mike Lindell. They were separate.
Some of them were, and some of them weren't. So, of the statements that Frank Speech was found liable for, two were made by Mike Lindell, and one was made by David Clemens. And it was, this is why I said on Friday that Frank Speech would have liability, because I didn't see in the trial enough of a distinction made on the platform versus publisher, and why they
Yeah.
the platform shouldn't be held to, defamation for what was said on it. And I
It'd be
didn't
kind of
think that
like,
case was made enough to, whether or not that's the right outcome, we could argue all day long. But in terms of what the jury saw, I thought that they were going to find
it'd
liability
be
for
kind
Frank
of like
Speech.
finding, and I hope don't freak out about this BBS, but it'd be kind of like finding bbsradio.com liable for something that you said or something like that, right? And which is crazy. Let me ask you this in terms of Eric Coomer, because he's filed other numerous lawsuits. Would it who any sense on he doesn't strike me as an incredibly wealthy guy. Any sense on who's paying for all of these lawsuits?
No, I mean, we can speculate, right? There's the usual suspects that have a great interest in this that we might assume would be backing it financially. I will say he had an incredible team. It felt like, I don't know if my numbers are accurate, but it felt like 10 lawyers in and out of that place on his behalf, and they were very capable. He had a top tier legal team for sure.
Well,
Another
this kind of case,
wasn't pro bono, and he wasn't
no.
pro se.
And they're going to be
But you
upset.
would have taken it. You would have taken it on a contingency fee basis.
Yeah, and two point. Yeah,
Yeah.
and 2 points. So I know from the
They wouldn't have
way,
been paying on an hourly basis.
yeah, I
and the
don't
way
think they're
can.
happy with the outcome and
No,
the damages.
if they recovered $400,000 from Mike Lindell, and they may not recover anything from Frank Singh, it's a disaster because I'm sure they
Eric
spent
Coomer
well
will
over
get
$1 million in attorney's fees, well over $1 million trying the case.
and Eric, if he gets anything, you get like $5 or something
No,
like that.
Eric.
He's the lawyer.
Well, it depends on what their agreement was. A normal agreement is that he'd get two-thirds and the lawyers would get one-third, in which case he would do fine if they recover. But the lawyers would have taken a bath.
And there's still, it's the same lawyers in his other cases, right? So there's Coomer versus Trump for President, which is in Denver District Court here. There's Coomer versus Byrne, which was in District of Colorado Court, but it was found that the court doesn't have personal jurisdiction over Patrick Byrne here. So that case has been moved to Tampa, to the North Central District of Florida. I don't remember which court it is, but it's the court that's in Tampa. And so there's, there are other actions that those same attorneys, I don't think they're, I think they would have liked to have gotten to malice, because if they were able to get to malice, and they might have a better shot at the Coomer versus Trump case. I believe Joe Altman is a defendant in that case.
Oh. Well, you got to wonder, Chuck, and you're a lawyer. I mean, having covered this kind of stuff before, I know a lot of times. So now Mike is going to appeal, and now the talks begin about some sort of settlement, right? It's like, okay, if you pay this. But if you're the lawyers, Chuck, does this kind of con. Because one of the things, let me back up, that I've been saying all along is I think the country, I mean, look at the revelations that just came out about China and the FBI, right? And China and ballots. The country, I think,
On
is
the
in a
same
very.
day, Julie, on the same day that the decision came out, that Kash Patel broke that news.
Right. And so the whole election denier, destroying democracy, people have been red-pilled. And I think the country is not where it was when Eric Coomer first kind of brought these cases. And what, I mean, what would, you sat through a lot of it and you heard a lot of it. Maybe a lot of it's going to be the same. I mean, you're thinking, and then Chuck, maybe then your thoughts if you're a lawyer, but yes, you're thinking in terms of how the other cases might fare.
Yeah, well, I think it's important for your audience to understand that this Chinese intelligence question came up at trial. So
Oh, it did.
the exhibit in question, I'm not sure if it was admitted or not, but it was referred to several times, was the Office of the DNI's letter on January 7th, 2021, that alleged that the intelligence community was selectively withholding intelligence on Chinese threats to elections because they thought that it was going to help President Trump. And that is documented January 7th, 2021. That was put forward as part of Mike Lindell's basis for his beliefs, why he believed that elections were stolen, and specifically stolen by China, was some having to do with the PCAPs and what he was hearing from Dennis Montgomery, but it was also supported by, you know, official documents from the Director of National Intelligence. And so that was the basis. So the same day that this decision comes down with this, you know, liability finding, Kash Patel produces that in August of 2021. So you can theorize, we can speculate, we don't know 100%, but this is likely some of the intelligence that was being referred to by the Director of National Intelligence at that time, acting director, that that the intelligence community was withholding evidence of Chinese interference and not influence. We're not talking about, you know, bots on social media. We're talking about interference with fake driver's license and fake ballots. And this was corroborated by Customs and Border Patrol finding these fake IDs at the border.
Right.
So they had actionable intelligence and physical evidence of what was being alleged, and they withheld it because they thought it was going to help Trump. And that is treasonous.
I know. And you got to wonder if that's some of the stuff that maybe Sidney Powell and Lynn Wood were sort of referencing too, if maybe they were hearing all of that same thing. Oh yeah. And it's like, you know, so for all these people who are like, oh, election denier, hopefully the juries in the other cases may be like, well, what about this China thing? You know what I mean? It's, yeah. You know, Mike Lindell is not crazy. Sidney Powell is not crazy, you know.
And that's new information, right? That's new information that's been put forward from the intelligence community now. And so it could potentially make it in as evidence in these follow-on cases. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I mean, the reality is that if you don't have doubts, I said, I think that based on the case that was made at trial, if you don't have doubts, I would think that even the most normie of jurors would at least have a little bit of a doubt of like, what really is going on? Because the explanations, the experts that came in to explain how it works and how all of these examples that brought up were, oh, it was human error, it was erroneous code, it was, you know, that wasn't my statements there are taken out of context. I really, you know, think that we should have confidence in these machines, even though I have a long record of saying that we shouldn't. Professor Haldeman.
Hey, Chuck, here's a legal question. Can the other side appeal? Or Ash, do you know that too?
Yeah. Yeah. They could potentially appeal if they thought the court erred.
Oh, I guess you're right.
They can appeal, but it's a doubtful appeal.
It's doubtful they would, yeah.
There's not, you know, I could see no ground for an appeal because it really wouldn't have been able to find an appealable grounds, one of the rulings.
And they're not really.
Which, if true, would may just send it back for a retrial. And I'm not sure they're dying for a retrial.
They didn't do that while on.
But you were asking before about, I did contingency fee work, so I have some idea what the lawyers were feeling like on the Eric Coomer's side. I don't like Eric Coomer.
Except, I don't think they're happy about this.
This is a disaster for them.
Yeah.
They obviously put together a kind of dream team and hoped to, at one point, shake the money tree. And so they would have been probably fronting most of the costs because Coomer wouldn't be able to. Now they'll recoup the costs here if they have a creditworthy defendant to recoup it from. But now they've got five more cases, so it may four or five. I'm not sure how many other things Coomer sued. But you know, this would have been mapped out by the law firm. Okay, recover this here, recover that there, and. Okay, well, we should be able to you know, potentially make millions upon millions of dollars, or you wouldn't do it. And for the number of lawyers they had, it sounds like, you know, they were all in.
Yeah.
And this type of, and I'm still fascinated by the Frank's TV was just a corporation.
Yeah.
Whether that has any assets worth taking. If they don't, then this whole thing is a real bloodbath. Now they got other cases and they can take it from there, but you know, Denver, you'd get a sympathetic jury because it's mostly in the area and mostly Democrats, so they're happy they prevailed on the
headlines
nation, but economics, I'm sure all their partners are going, we did what? Why did we do this? What the hell
Yeah,
do
I imagine those conversations. I worked not in law, but in management consulting and contingency projects as well. And when they go south, the whole partnership is pissed. So,
Yes,
yeah.
very much
The one I
so.
wanted to address in your chat, Jacob said, what about Tina Peters' trial? Were there issues there? Absolutely. And I started out from the same position. We streamed that whole thing at state court, so we were able to stream it, right? And as the trial went on in Tina Peters' case, the judge got more hostile to the defense, which isn't necessarily, an issue unless the jury is present. And he didn't, he was annoyed with them. And I think a lot of that stemmed from the pretrial motions and the stuff leading up to the case. The judge was already annoyed with the defense, and you could see that, but he didn't show it. And this is my opinion, right? He didn't show it in front of the jury until about halfway through the trial, and then he started showing his bias in front of the jury, and that's indefensible, in my opinion, because the judge is to the jury, no matter what the jury instructions say, the judge is an authority figure, and if the judge is being openly hostile to the defense, it's going to bias the jury. And I didn't see that up until about halfway through, but then I definitely saw it. And then when they did the sentencing conversation, he basically admitted
Oh
it,
yeah,
right?
he went off the deep end.
I'm happy. I've made my peace with my decisions, he said.
That's it. Let me sort of dovetail off of that, and then I know Chuck, you wanted to get to your other question, because we won't keep you on forever, Ash. But what do you make of the department? Wait,
Okay.
what do you make of the Department of Justice asking that Jenna Griswold to? I mean, I'm sure she's like shredding them all right now, or they're deleting them, but to keep all election records, was it from the 2020 election? What do you make of that?
So I love it. It stems from a May request. So they're actually 30 days deficient on this, and now we're hearing about it. The fun thing about this, Julie, is that during the period in question, the DOJ was sort of a friendly to Griswold and Co. in Colorado. And so it's very possible that they know they should have records, right? That they know that there are some communications, some records, because they have the DOJ side of those things. And we'll see what is produced. We'll see if they destroy evidence or if they're just non-compliant. I have a feeling that we're going to see a big showdown here, and I'm here for it. I had the opportunity to, you guys will appreciate this. I sat in the trial for a little bit of time next to former Deputy Secretary of State Chris Beall. And the
Your
last time
bestie.
that I had seen him before, and he walked into the courtroom, the only place to sit was next to me. And he has had this look on his face like, oh shit, do I really want to do this? And I kind of scooted over to make room, right? So he had to. Yeah, the last time I had seen him was when I was cross-examining him. And he's outside of the government now. I imagine that, maybe some NGO cases coming, something. I don't know. He's teaching at
Interesting that
DU,
he's
and
at the trial,
said he's
must
going
I
to teach it. He's teaching at DU now, and he said he's going to teach it. I actually talked to him quite a bit because I had a law professor next to me, right? So I could ask questions about the legal standards in the trial and stuff. And
Right.
so I did speak to him. I was a little snarky. When he sat down, I said, "Don't worry, I won't make it weird." And then I totally made it weird.
I
So.
made weird for him.
Hey, just Jacob is saying KAO, keep Ash on. So now that's going to be fascinating to see how that plays out. Interestingly, because Weiser obviously is the AG who would like to be governor, even though Michael Bennett is beating him and clobbering him. So he's going to try to get everything he can out of it. But Chet, did you want to talk about the jungle primary question real quick?
Yeah, I did. One of the more interesting things that's going on is that all the parts are moving. The standard politics isn't existing. In the fall, it was anticipated that the initiatives on the ballot calling for jungle primaries and ranked choice voting would pass, because they had spent 10, $11 million compared to about 300,000. So it was a shock that it failed. It was a shock to the system. For a long time now, Phil Anschutz and the other establishment ones have rethought how they viewed Colorado, and they've really given up the ghost on it. They no longer support the Republican Party in any meaningful sense as for
The party entity, the party, like
the
the
entity.
official organization.
They no
It is
longer
sort of
think.
a failed entity, though. You can't really blame them.
No,
No.
you can't blame them. It's not going to, It's not going to take the state Senate. It's not going to take the state House. Now, it's a failed entity in part because of them, because
Sure. Yeah.
they're the ones who allowed mail-in ballots and everything else without fighting it.
Yeah.
They
They didn't have to fight it. They were in power. Mail-in ballots were brought to us by Scott Gessler, and machines were brought to us by Wayne Williams. The Republicans did
Yeah,
that.
that's
Right.
right, because
The
they're
gold
in power.
standard boys.
Yeah,
Yeah.
the gold standard boys. So they're the ones who wanted it, and it's proved to be, as in Oregon, California, doesn't matter where it is. The Democrats are very good at mail-in ballot and ballot harvesting, and Republicans are awful at it, and they're starting to get a little better, but they're way behind. And the Republicans, and I've run campaigns, the campaign workers on in municipal elections where it isn't a Republican and Democrat candidates. There's kind of a jungle primary sort of concept
Yeah.
there. But as a practical matter, if you tell a Republican to do something that he's not sure about, he won't do it. He'll go, no, I don't think that's right. Even if it is right, the Democrat, they could care less. They just
Schmools, those are
rules,
guidelines.
rules,
Yeah.
those are for losers. And they'll break every rule there is and think nothing of it, in fact, be proud of it. And therefore, when you're harvesting ballots, they're great at cheating at it. But so they've given up on the Republican Party and shown in different ways. But the
Yeah.
final announcement of the surrender of the white flag went up was John Caldera wrote a column for, I think, the Denver Gazette. And he said he wanted to have quote unquote open primaries, and open primaries are jungle primaries. Anybody can run. It's important, words are always important. Whenever you see a headline from the Supreme Court decision in conservative media saying they've gotten rid of gender affirming care, those people have been suckered in to what they're really doing to these kids, chemically castrating them.
But explain, yeah, it's not really open primary. What John Caldera and what they're now advocating
It's a
is just
jungle
having
primary.
one
Huge,
primary.
massive primary with no differential. And his logic to it is as follows. In Republican rural counties, you'll have two Republicans. You'll have a choice between two Republicans. In the urban areas, you'll have a choice between two Democrats. But in all these suburban areas, which includes where we live and probably you live, we live in Adams County. What county do you live in?
I'm in Douglas, Castle Rock.
Yeah, same thing. What will happen is what's been happening is that all these suburban moms and suburban women, you agree with the Republican candidate's position, but they're designated as Republicans and quote unquote that they might as well have a swastika by their name.
That's what Caldera said.
That's what Caldera said, might as well have a swastika by their name. But if they run as independents, then the fact that the people agree with most of their positions, and they're so the typical socially moderate, fiscally conservative BS. But they'll pick those out, and so you'll have all these people be elected as what he calls FUs, which is unaffiliated voters.
So
With
the Republicans are going to win elections by deceiving people into voting for Republicans, but calling them something
That's the
different.
gist of
Yes,
it.
yes,
And in
yes.
so doing, we're going to blow up the party system because
Well,
people see the Republican Party as Nazis. Yes, that's sort of the gist of it. Okay.
Well, no, they already see him. The average decent,
Well,
law-abiding citizen sees him
I
as
think the thing
Nazi.
that's
But see, here's the key under the Calderian analysis. Once they get in the legislature, they'll caucus with the Republicans. So all of a sudden, Republicans will control the House and the Senate because they'll take their Republicans and then their unaffiliateds that are really
They'll go back to
Republicans.
being Republicans.
And
Yeah,
so
I think
the odds on
that's very
that are about
silly.
zero, right? I
Yeah,
mean,
it's very
there's no
silly.
indication that's ever has occurred on any jungle primary. They have jungle primaries in Louisiana and some other places. But that's Caldera's excuse, I think, for saying we've given up. And what he's really saying, at least in my mind, is they know that if they can have a jungle primary where anybody can run, rich guys rule. I mean, Mr. A, and you wouldn't have heard of most of the people running. Mr. A, if he has $1 million or $2 million or $3 million behind him, can overwhelm everybody else by name recognition. And so there will be no grassroots candidates. They'll
There
just
won't
be
be. On
candidates of
either
rich
side, really.
people.
Yeah.
There's no checks on the money either.
Right.
No checks on the money
Yeah.
and
So,
nothing
yeah.
else. So, I mean,
Yeah,
I think
my favorite part of it is that there the faction of Republicanism, Colorado Republicanism, that just destroyed spent the past 2 years destroying America First efforts to reclaim the party, the effort that made the party more popular than it's been since before the 20 teens, right? That faction is now giving up and suggesting that the party should just forfeit the rest of its power. It's almost like they weren't actually Republicans to begin with. And I'm not a Republican. I left the party in 2011 because I think that it's uniparty controlled opposition and that they're always going to fight against the interest of the people. It's been my experience. I thought that we had a great shot here in Colorado when it came to Dave Williams and what the party was doing, but the Caldera faction of things went
Yeah.
all out assault against it. And how long have they been in power? What has it been, like 3 months? And now they're giving up? That's awesome.
Right. Yeah,
More than
exactly.
that.
Well, and I think, and we, and you know, and we'll let you go because we'll talk a little bit more about this. But I think it is interesting that the Anschutz media industrial complex has been slowly shifting to suddenly they were opposed and they were neutral. Now they're openly supporting sort of the Kent theory, jungle primary and ranked choice voting.
And
And my
Colorado
concern.
politics, which is owned by Anschutz indirectly through a corporation,
Supports it.
reprints Associated Press articles, which are always overwhelmingly left.
So Ash, the fight is just beginning because this is what I think is going to be the upcoming big fight.
Yeah, I would just say the bottom line on jungle primaries is that you're further centralizing elections. You're now taking even the primary process and making it a centralized election process. You're taking the interest out of it, right? The different, and maybe people think that that's a good thing. I think that that, as Chuck said, allows money to dominate the situation. But at the end of the day, we're making elections more complicated, and we can't trust elections to begin with because they are so complicated. Centralization creates complexity. And complexity breeds and hides corruption. This will be no different. This is the same people that were, as you guys said, pushing for it on the ballot measure. The people didn't want it. And I think the people still don't want it, but you know, they'll try to wear us down over time. We need to tell the truth about this because jungle primaries are the step change to ranked choice voting. And ranked choice voting are elections that we can never verify, ever. We're never going to be able to verify our vote. It's heading in the absolute wrong direction.
Exactly. All right. Hey, Ash, everybody's like, we love you. We love you. Thank you. I always like to do this because I know people ask us later. So where can people find you? I know you've got a great one-stop shopping site.
Yeah, Linktree. So linktree.com/AshInAmerica, Ash with an E, and that's where all the shows, all the writing, all the everything you can find out about the case. We're still waiting for a decision in the plaintiff's appeal in NAACP versus USCIP. We won in court, as you guys know, in July of last year, so it's been almost a year, and we're waiting for the 10th Circuit to make a decision because they appealed, and I think we're going to win again, but
When
we're
are the
still waiting.
briefings finished by? How long ago was
End of January.
Well, no, it takes about 6 months. Yeah, that's about right. That's
Right.
about right.
All right. Well, good
Any
luck on
day
that.
any
Now.
day now.
All
Any
right.
day
Ash,
now.
thank you. Thank you for all
Thanks,
the work that
guys.
you do. Appreciate it.
And great
My
job,
pleasure.
Ash.
Thanks. All right. Thank you. That's so cute. Keep Ash on. Do you want to talk more about the election pushing, or do you want to?
Well, it's just the whole deal. I got in my email today another, sad pleading thing from our favorite Road to Red girl,
Oh, Heidi Ganahl.
begging for money. I mean, it said you can become a summit member of the Road to
Oh.
Red, and
Yeah,
I
we need
mean,
to do more begging for no money.
I mean, well, it
None of
probably
which goes to the
works.
Republican Party, but
It
well,
probably works. But
well,
it's
and we'll be
more
doing
and
more on that
more,
because there's a
which indicates a certain that this event, which will be Saturday, it's your normal
the Eric
event
Trump
where
event.
she's pouring out the dough to get Eric Trump here. And it was interesting. They read off, there was an email that had all the gold sponsors, the platinum sponsors, and the other sponsors. And they were very small businesses, in some cases, individual, like Gregory Carlson, who's no multimillionaire. So it really was kind of like we're desperate, we're sinking, and save us,
Well, and
save
we'll be
us from
keeping an eye because
ourselves.
there's a listening tour going on. I do think that this is going to be another big push by a lot of the big money people in and Democrats in Colorado to fundamentally change our election system, and they haven't given up. Wanted to though one thing get your take on this because you listen to it more. And if anybody wants to weigh in on the chat section or unmute yourself, go ahead. What do you make of this? Apparently Tucker Carlson interviewed Ted Cruz, and it was
Yeah,
like
I
they
saw
got in a
that. I listened
shouting
to
match.
that.
And then Ted Cruz is later saying that on foreign policy, Carlson has, quote, gone bat crap crazy. He's gone off the rails. And then meanwhile, the consulting firm comes out and says Tucker Carlson is not being paid by Qatar. I mean, what do you, I'm kind of the my just generic thing is, I don't think Tucker Carlson is really saying anything that he hasn't said before. I think he's just one of those guys who's really anti the United States getting involved in any kind of foreign thing at any level. I mean, or has he gone bat crap crazy? I mean, you've listened to him.
Yeah, he's gone bat crazy.
Okay.
He reminds me of some guy who's been married for 20 years, and that kind of held him within bounds and so forth. He gets a divorce, and then he gets, pretty crazy.
And that's what Jacob says. Tucker Carlson is tripping over his own success.
And he no longer has somebody out there he's got to worry about, and therefore he's gone totally, in my mind, nutso. Nutso. And I love Tucker Carlson. I mean, he's, as you said, I listen to him all the time and love his thing. I mean, he's got these 2-hour interviews with people, which is, a little bit much to take. But he's getting crazier and crazier. And his view, he truly is a 1930s or, I don't know, 1820s isolationist. He certainly believes we should do nothing internationally, and any effort to do anything is some sort of a
Well, and what I think is,
huge conspiracy to con America. So no, if I had a choice normally between Ted Cruz and Tucker Carlson, I'd take Tucker Carlson any day of the week. But on this one, I kept on going, man,
I
Tucker's
agree
crazy.
with Ted Cruz. But one thing too, I would like to say about it is when you look at stuff on social media, and I think that sometimes the Republicans, because we were beat down so badly for so long, I think it's important to say Tucker Carlson can be sort of two things at once, right? He can disagree with Trump on Iran, and yet he can still, in general, support the things that Trump is doing. Trump can be the same way, right? He can disagree with Tucker Carlson on Iran and not have to blast Tucker Carlson and eject him from MAGA world, right? I think we have to be careful. You can just sometimes, people, there's a lot of stuff going on, and people can have a variety of opinions about, and we're not always going to agree on 100% of the things. It's just like people are like, oh, we hate Tucker Carlson now. I'm like, well, on this issue, maybe you don't agree. And I mean, the Iran thing, I mean, that's developing like almost by the hour anymore, right? I mean, the last I read, Trump is back in the Situation Room. Iranian planes are landing in Oman. There's speculation that, is this the Iranian government bailing? So I imagine if you're Donald Trump, you have a little bit more to do than worry about Tucker Carlson interviewing Ted Cruz,
Well, Donald Trump cannot expel Tucker Carlson from MAGA. He doesn't control MAGA. MAGA is beyond him, and it has its own views. It was in his first term when he was waffling on Paris Climate Accord, and he was thinking of maybe not getting out of it, and everybody kind of went bonkers. Last time I've seen Donald Trump booed was a year and a half ago or so, when he was saying, why didn't everybody get their vaccine? And started booing. So, he doesn't control his own movement that he
No, which is a
started.
good thing, I think. Hey, we got Karen Cataline on line one. Karen, hey,
Hey,
nice to hear from you.
it's good to
What do you
talk to you
got?
both. Sorry I'm calling so late, but I tuned in. I wanted to thank Chuck for his comments about Tucker Carlson. I'm certainly not have never said or don't think he's a anti-Semite, but his tunnel vision about not being able to see the difference between using a bunker-busting bomb to stop the Iranians from killing, you know, destroying the Middle East, et cetera, and then leaving is not the same as a protracted war, which we've been in for 50 years with this maniac regime in Iran. And for Tucker Carlson not to see it tells me that he's smart but dumb, and he's been that way and getting worse for a long time. He's absolutist in his position, and he doesn't give Trump the benefit of the doubt, which he sure ought to. And guess what? He was wrong on Trump until he wasn't.
Yeah, good point. Good point. He was. Yeah, I mean, that's what people are dragging out now, too. Well, and I agree with you. I mean, what's your take on what's going on? To me, I was reading something where...
Wait a minute, Julie, you know, you don't agree. You don't agree. You were on the other side. You were...
I was just simply saying, social media wise, I don't think we have to, I would just say kick Trump out or kick Tucker Carlson. I mean, I just think that there are so many things going on right now people say, oh, the MAGA movement is falling apart. It's like, well, no, it's not. There's just disagreement within the ranks, but there are so many issues that you're not going to have 100% agreement on all of these things ever.
This is a very nuanced situation. It is extremely fluid right now. People's tempers and sensibilities are at very high level. There's so much. I've done a lot of radio on this myself, and you can't just use a soundbite to talk about it. I do believe Tucker has, he's gone nuts. He's not quite Candace Owens, but he's getting there. All right, he's getting there. Yeah. And Candace Owens, I was so disappointed in her.
She kind of went nuts, too.
Well, and if I may, and I know, again, you're really at the end of your show.
We got a couple minutes.
What I think is maybe going on, and I could be really wrong on this, but I think, Tucker, like many people, as we lived through this nightmare of the Otto Penn administration, people got more religion. I did too. I mean, I'm not a Bible thumper by any stretch, but we had to go to God because there was nowhere else to go. And I think Tucker did that too. He was a non-religious, I don't know, Presbyterian, whatever he is.
Episcopalian. He was brought up like I was.
Episcopalian. Right. And he has said, he started reading the Bible, and you know what? There's a segment of Christians, God, we love the Christians who support Israel and understand its significance on so many levels. I couldn't even begin to go into it. It isn't just like any other place. I'm not saying, and I don't mind if someone is a so-called isolationist, but in his case, he doesn't have a remote clue about the spiritual significance of Israel on a world scale, and how this country is in grave danger, as Levin said, who's quite passionate about it. I heard him say, "We got a regime that tried to assassinate our president twice, and people are arguing about whether it's our problem or not." honestly, if this was any other time but now, they would have flattened that country a long time ago. And thank you, Jimmy Carter, for turning a beautiful country over to an insane regime. And Trump wants to end it. And somehow, dumb little, smart little Tucker Carlson cannot see that beyond the end of his nose.
No.
Well, let me ask you this, Karen, which is the one... That's kind of the ongoing question. Let's assume that the United States.
So it's, we have one minute, just a couple minutes here.
We'll ask for forgiveness from BBC.
BBS.
That we do a bunker buster, the Fordo thing is obliterated and we're done. What happens then? And that's the $64,000 question. I don't think you can just say, well, that's great. Good luck in rebuilding it. I think Israel has to go and say, that island with all the refineries, that's gone. The oil fields, they're gone. The gas fields, they're gone. And otherwise have a good life. But I don't think they can just go, okay, we got rid of the nuclear plant, and, have fun after that.
Here's what I think, Chuck, and I love talking to both of you about this. I think some people I know who still appreciate Trump continue to underestimate Trump, and they continue to underestimate Israel. Israel and Trump, and they are not the same thing. Trump's allegiance is to our country. Are I think all the meetings that he's had at Camp David, Trump, and all of this is to consider exactly what you're talking about. Trump is brilliant at looking at, he's a chess player, and he sees the big picture. Do I think anybody's perfect? Do I think he's God? No. But he is here for this reason, and I can't think of anybody who is more brilliantly qualified to broker this. And the reason he's talking to his advisors, in my opinion, is exactly because what happens next. Because the truth of the matter is, they could have flattened Iran a long time ago. They could have done that bunker buster. That's the easy part. The other part is much, much harder, and that's what I think they're concerned about, because that's what always happens in the Middle East. Nature abhors a vacuum, especially in the Arab world, and you don't want another doggone dictator. That's what's happening in Syria, is that they want to, I mean, Trump can change this Middle East to a different place with the Abraham Accords, and that's his long-term goal. I mean, if you look at it over the trajectory, you'll see they took care of the Houthis first. That wasn't accidental. They took care of Hezbollah first, second. That wasn't accidental, because they had a plan. They've had a plan for years. I mean, Israel has. And Israel, I mean, look what they did with the pagers. And they're talking about something that they've planned for 2 years. They're very smart and good at this. It doesn't mean they're perfect, but wait and see. And we're going to watch things unfold that I don't think we dreamed ever to happen. And I don't know what it is, but I know that the narrow-minded, tunnel-vision people like Tucker Carlson has a lot to say, gee, I was wrong about eventually.
Yeah, I'll have to disagree about Trump being a chess player, having played a little chess. He would have gotten up from the table. He'd been stomping around. He would have kicked over the table. I mean, he's about the farthest thing from a chess player emotionally, intellectually.
Have you
he's
seen
very
Trump
bright,
really
but
lose it? I don't. I think
no, Chuck. I disagree with you. Hey, listen. Although we do have to wrap it up.
Okay. Well, we'll disagree. I think Trump's also a little bit crazy. If
and Karen, just so you know, Jacob is saying KKO. Keep Karen on. Hey, thank you for calling in.
Thanks, Karen.
Thank you.
My pleasure.
We'll continue this
Love
conversation later. All right. Thank you to the guys at BBS, everybody on Zoom. Couple programming notes. Darcy is filling in for us on Friday, and then Mark Poff is filling in for us on Monday. We have a highly successful young golf player here, so he's keeping us busy traveling around the universe. But we will be back on Wednesday, so we'll see you all then. And Darcy and Mark have great shows planned.
All right. Take care, everybody.